Pump up the volume on your parenting with Parent Pump Radio. Tune into something different that makes a difference. At Parent Pump Radio, instead of a ripple, we choose to create a splash. Get energized, get inspired, and get informed with how to parent in the new millennium. With your host and parent coach super guide, Jacqueline T.D. Nguyen.
Hi, this is Jacqueline T.D. Nguyen. We're here to pump up your parenting skill, pump up your knowledge, and pump up your energy. Today, our show is sponsored by The Coop. The Coop is located in the South Bay area of Los Angeles. It's the newest and coolest play and party space for kids and adults. Kids will play for hours in their enormous ball pit, two-story curly slide, super cool rope climbing tunnel, fantastic bouncer, or the kids can just powwow in the teepee or dance the day away on the electric dance and gaming floor. So book your next party at The Coop today. You can contact them at 310-374-2668, or you can find them on the web at The Coop, that spells C-O-O-P like Paul, southbay.com. If you're an expert because of your credentials and or because of your life experience with something relating to parenting, please contact us and share your story and expertise. Our email address is info@parentpumpradio.com. So now on to our show. The topic today is going to be about helping moms strengthen and fortify their children to create a better home environment. Over 50% of marriages end in divorce right now is the statistics. And in some states, it's even higher than that. So there's a lot of high conflict relationships going on because of the divorce and obviously the marriage. And so what's going on with the children? How are we helping them? And what's going on with the conflicts that's between the two parents? I'm really interested in this subject. And I know there are many parents out there who are interested in this because either they are going through it or they are going to be going through it. So our guest today is a medical doctor. She's a psychiatrist and family practitioner. She's also an intuitive counselor and a healer. She graduated from the UCLA School of Medicine with over 25 years in the industry, and she's helped hundreds of people to live better lives. And she's really passionate about helping women feel vibrant, sexy, and empowered after their divorce. So please help me welcome Dr. Eve Alexandra Ruiz. Hi, Dr. Eve.
Hi there. Thank you.
How are you?
I'm doing fine. So nice to see the sunshine after all the rain.
I know. So you can also get a hold of Dr. Eve at her email address. It's Dr. and it's spelled D-R. Eve, it's spelled Y, V like Victor, E at empowermentfirm.com. Or you can call her at 949-424-4494. So this is a really serious subject, and I really want to make sure that we get the content correctly, Dr. Eve. First of all, tell me how, I mean, you're a medical doctor, you're a psychiatrist, and you're helping women with divorce. How did that all come about?
I thought that I knew from a very young age exactly what I wanted to be in life. Of course, we're very young and naive when we're only 2.5 years old.
So. Yeah.
I remember, though, that my parents stood still and were so respectful when my pediatrician, when I would go for my vaccinations, walked into the room where we were waiting for him. And I loved the way the doctor treated me. And I understood that whatever he was doing for me was for my better health. So that inspired me to become a physician as well. Now, when I went through medical school, I realized that as many people were coming in for recurrent physical conditions and we weren't able to completely assuage the symptoms, that there might be something underlying that going on that we weren't addressing. As a result of that, I ended up, after family practice, going back into residency for a second one, and that was in psychiatry. There, I found out I was one step closer to the soul. But we were being pushed into becoming only pill pushers, doing Medi-Vals because of insurance, only paying so much so they would pay the social workers to do the therapy, not the psychiatrists. After having experienced a little bit of disheartening at that level and still wanting to get more inside the person and find out what is really going on in an even more holistic approach, after many years of experimenting to develop my right brain, I ended up exposed to the fact that my supernatural abilities, or I should say my intuitive gifts, could play a role in my helping other people. And as soon as I found that out, I got trained for Reiki. I received other sorts of supplemental training, and I use my arsenal of traditional and non-traditional skills now to help people find that inner light to guide them, usually through great obstacles and often in relationship issues.
First of all, can you tell the listeners what Reiki is for the ones that don't know what that is?
Absolutely. Reiki is a form of energy healing. As we can feel each other's energy, you know, when we stretch our hands out and another person is near us and does the same, we can start to feel when we get into their personal space. It's actually another word for their energy. So we work with that energy to help people shift from one emotional place or psychological place to another.
So how does Reiki fit into Western medicine? Being a family practitioner, that's very Western.
Yes. Psychiatry in Western society is a scientific discipline to evaluate people's emotions and people's psychology and their thought patterns. What they're really examining is people's energy.
Okay.
How their energy flows, because every thought is energy. Thought is matter, because energy is matter. Energy can never be destroyed. It can only be transformed. And so using that underlying principle, you can see then a very neat overlap between when psychiatrists or other people in the traditional medical field talk about thought patterns and how we want to unplug certain thought patterns and rewire the person. Really, what we're doing is we are shifting their energy, the energy of thought, into a better place.
So Reiki is one of the form of modality, energy modality, that helps do that.
Exactly.
Okay. So now let's get back to the high conflict relationship, right? Because you're talking about divorce. How are you helping people deal with divorce and the ordeals that is involved with that and starting their life again?
That is an excellent question. What I work on doing with women who have gone through divorce, and it can be men as well.
Yeah.
It just turns out that because society has a glass ceiling for women in so many areas, it's usually the woman who also gets the custody of the children. And with this, it's a double liability in the fact that a woman who has often been relying on her husband for income now is living on her own with children and needs more money, but can only make less. Also, in society, people will support a man who is sending his children to daycare and working, but they tend to put a stigma on a woman who's doing the same because she, quote, isn't being a mother. So a woman has a lot to deal with after she has divorced someone. She has taken care of one source problem by removing herself from a situation where she and her children likely shouldn't be. However, she now has to build her own life. And what I do is help organize her, help educate her, and help empower her so that the goals that she must achieve actually will feel more doable and reasonable. And in the way that I do it, my proprietary formula, I actually help to accelerate her obtaining the goals that she needs to have that better life and better lifestyle for her and her children.
Wow. Okay. So let's talk about the relationship, because you were saying she's leaving a relationship. Obviously, she's not happy. There's probably some abuse. And for what I know and what you and I have talked about is domestic violence, domestic abuse. So what role does domestic violence and abuse play in dealing with this?
It's already a substantial matter for anyone to have to go through the ordeal of abuse. There could be various reasons. People are growing at different rates. People are maturing and realizing that what may have worked for them before in terms of a partner no longer does. However, once you add the overlay of abuse in a situation, it's even a more chaotic world. There are 275 million children worldwide that are exposed to parental abuse. And the effects of this, I'm just imagining, if you took those 275 million people who have watched their parents be abused and put them into one part of the globe, they would be the fourth largest country in the world.
Wow.
So this is, yeah, this is a substantial, significant problem. And the thing is, the children learn a lot from role modeling. So the fact that there is a parent who is constantly putting down another parent, who is causing tension in the household through the application of intimidative manipulation to another partner, all of these actions are actually affecting the children and making them believe that this is how a relationship should work and how a family should work. So the mother and the father, and I'm going to be referring to the mother as the victim simply for simplicity and consistency in this time. The statistics currently do show that 90 to 95% of the time it's the woman who's victimized. However, men are less forthcoming usually in admitting that they have been abused.
I've heard that even witnessing the abuse, so like the children or the bystander, say, you know, you're getting bullied and somebody's sitting, standing by and watching it. So just being a bystander, that is also a form of violence because I guess those people also are affected by the abuse.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's exactly right. In fact, there's something interesting. I believe it's 62% of boys who have committed murder, boys, have actually killed the perpetrator of the abuse in their household.
Wow.
Those boys likely would never have thought to kill anyone in their childhood, but the exposure to this revved them up so much and made them want to be the savior, be the hero in the household. So that is the scenario in the extreme, one scenario that can come forth from this situation. Imagine all the lesser ones, anything shy of that, that can be happening dynamically in the children's hearts and minds as they're experiencing this.
They say history repeats itself. So the abuser was actually abused at one time. So they just keep repeating themselves.
Yes. Yes. The children have a choice. They could become abusers or they can become poster people for not abusing.
Yeah.
And the risk is in the ones, of course, who feel that they are entitled.
Yes.
And so children in homes where domestic violence occurs are themselves even physically abused or seriously neglected because the perpetrator, and so in my prototype family, simply for this interview, if the father is so busy on manipulating the mother, he's not focused on the children. He's neglecting them because he's busy getting his needs met according to his disproportionate sense of entitlement. She, on the other hand, she is so preoccupied with pleasing him and trying to figure out when the next shoe will drop, when will he next lose his temper or come after her for whatever reason, that she is distracted and neglecting often the children's needs.
We're talking as if the woman is still in the relationship, but what I find is even after the divorce, there may be not be any more physical violence or the yelling and the screaming and the fighting because they're in the same home, but I find a lot of women still dealing with this with all the other definition of domestic violence. Now, I know I have a list here on some of what domestic violence, and I didn't even realize, like reporting to government agency. So it says threatening to report the other person's behavior to some sort of government agency. That's considered abuse. Neglect, not giving the children medication on your custodial time. That's all considered domestic violence. And I have spoken to many single moms who still deal with these emotional attack and verbal attack through emails and texts and having their children deal with it, and it continues.
Yes, this is very true. Once there is a divorce and the constant physical presence of the perpetrator may be stopped and only revisited during weekend visits or during the night, the memories, though, of the trauma in that household from before are so severe that for these children, they meet the clinical criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
It is possible for them to be getting treatment for the post-traumatic stress disorder. And it's very important for the mother afterward to be educating herself so that she can educate the children. Just as you were talking about finding out this and the other, just on a most superficial level of interviewing young adult or older adolescent young ladies on what is abuse, 78% recognize that physical harm to someone else's abuse. But less than a quarter, only 13% of them actually know that abuse exists beyond the physical form.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
We're not educated. And people think that physical abuse is the only abuse that is harmful. But really, that may be, I think, the easiest to heal from. It's all the other stuff that hits us on such a deeper level, the emotional, the verbal, constant verbal attacks that hits that subconsciously.
Yes.
And if the children are hearing this, even though it's not directed to them, you were saying earlier, it's the energy, just the feeling of it being in the air. Sometimes when you walk into a room, you can tell if two people were just fighting or arguing. They stop and you're like, ooh, this feels weird. Or you walk into a room and it just feels good. And so you know that. And children, I think, really feel those things. And whether the parents are divorced, they're not together, they can still feel it.
That's right. The children are the emotional barometers of their parents.
So then, since we're talking about children, let's segue into that. How does it affect the children? And we know what the problem is. Now, as the parent, as the other parent that wants to help, how do we help them? How do we fortify them and make them strong? Because we can't prevent the other parent from doing what they're doing.
Okay, so the first part of the question was, how is it affecting the children?
Yes.
And children exposed to domestic violence are 5 to 7 times more likely to experience significant psychological problems. Also, children who have been exposed to chronic abuse and violence can have lower IQ scores. They can have visual motor integration skill impairment. They can have poorer language skills. They often can be diagnosed as having ADHD. They may not actually have ADHD, but they may have a very strong emotional component to the fact that they do have difficulty focusing and having attention because of that direct threat that was played in the household against being able to think on your own and have peace in the household. The perpetrator of abuse thrives on being able to control people and control situations and manipulate people, usually keeping them in the dark as to what might happen next. So again, he is not giving up one strand of that control.
You say that word control. That's what I learned, is that domestic violence is about control, how much they can keep control in every little aspect.
Yes, there are people in society who, within their personality, like to be more in control of situations than others. So it isn't only about control, although that is one important feature. It's more of a network of characteristics that a person who actually abuses has, and the constant or consistent employment of methods, often including intimidation or manipulation, that actually is the underlying connector for all these features. Now, back to the children and their effects. We've talked about the lower IQ scores. We've talked about other things. It's not saying that it's guaranteed that every child will suffer in these ways. However, there is a much higher probability that these things can be affected. And what that translates to for a child in school is that the child may, in the developmental task of school adaptation and academic achievement, they may not achieve as high a goal as the other children. So there is definitely a vested interest in doing something, whatever we can, shy of completely removing the abuser from the child's life, if that's not what the courts deem is appropriate. And just as you say, even they need more education.
What I find in this society, in the court system, in the legal system, is they are more into treatment than they are prevention and education. And when it comes to treatment, it has to be something detrimental that's just happened to the children. These manipulator, these intimidator and controller knows just how far to go to sidestep that legal bound and just enough to keep with their intimidation and manipulation and control.
Exactly. And you really hit the nail on the head when you said that the key is education and they are lacking in it and that they need more education. There was a group of women who attempted about 4 years ago to have education put into the schools in the section where they talk about sex to the children and other elements of this nature. And actually, the House of Commons voted against it.
Wow.
And so if we as a society are not even encouraging, you know, society is the macrocosm to the family unit. So it's interesting to note that where we have abusive families and there is the stigma of letting that information out and there is a lack of knowledge within the families so that the mothers often don't even know that what's happening to them is abuse, this is a watershed effect in part from the master part of society as a large family denying the truths about this, not wanting to go into it, not wanting to get educated, and leaving us in the dark.
That's such a good point. So I want to get back because I really want to help the children. I want to help the parents who want to be educated to help their children. So can you give us a couple of examples of what we can do now to do that?
The first tip that I'm going to give is even before there is divorce in the family, because the children are being exposed to this violence from before the divorce. During that time, it is important, once that the mother has realized that this is abuse, that it's all right to discuss this with the children, okay? And to actually come up with the children with safety plans. Now, the information that is being learned or can be learned even before the divorce can still be applied after the divorce. And so we're planting seeds in these children. Okay. For instance, if father is coming home and you can already tell by the way he slams that door or drops his keys when he gets to the door that he's drunk, because often there is, not always, but often there may be a substance use accompanying this, right?
Absolutely.
So whether it's that kind of signal or others that he puts out that set the stage for something violent or bad to potentially happen, there can be a plan for where the children can go, what they can do. Go play outside, go to a friend's house. If there is a situation where the child thinks that or is beginning to hear the father physically abusing the mother or even verbally, loudly yelling at her, the thing that a child can do is fake an injury for while outside and get the mother outside of the house that way. Now, how on earth is this connecting to how can a child feel safer or be more protected? The fact that you are reviewing with the child that these are problems that are not normal problems with everyone and they do need to be addressed, but carefully and sensitively, is already attuning them to the fact that they do have rights. It's simply a matter of strategizing. There is a way out. It's simply a matter of patience and applying things moment by moment and making progress. And you're also sending the message by saying, all right, if you hear daddy yelling at mommy, then pretend that you hurt yourself out here simply so that we can get me away from there and I'll stay safe. And then I'll be in a place where I can protect you better. We are role modeling for them that although daddy is misbehaving, so to speak, in child terms, mommy has rights. And mommy doesn't deserve to stay in that space, and she shouldn't, okay?
Okay.
It is much healthier for a child to experience being part of having mommy come outside because mommy shouldn't be that way than for them to be inside and watch daddy hurt mommy.
Now, what happens if the couple are divorced and, say, the children are being yelled at or getting abused too?
Yes.
A lot of people think yelling is a raising in volume, but it's not. It's also the tonality, is the way you stand. It's the way you project yourself, right? And I think kids just use the word yelling because they don't know anything else. But it's really that feeling of being scared. It's just dad and maybe there's a girlfriend or a new wife or something and the children and the kids are feeling this. What do you suggest?
Children can talk to their friends also and come up with, if the friend is a neighbor to the father, then when something of this nature happens, the child friend could invite the child to go over to their house and say, oh, it's time for lunch or it's time for whatever. And mom wanted to know if you can come and can ask the father if that's all right and that she forgot to mention it. When there is abuse that is going on in a household where no one else is around, the best thing for the child to do is to keep the eye contact minimal, to be looking down and to be simply taking in submissive posture with the intent of keeping him off or preventing him from exacerbating. Because the more that they fight, the more the father or the perpetrator will get belligerent and want to impose his will.
Now, what about if they feel really unsafe calling the police, 911?
Yes, if there is something that is physically happening to someone, someone's life is in danger, absolutely calling 911 is the way to go.
So it's just in a physical thing? I mean, could it be something where they're emotionally feeling not safe?
Yes. If the intimidation includes a threat of harm, then yes. Anytime that there is a threat of harm to someone, it is appropriate to call the police. Now, the caution that I bring up here is that when a person is abusive, they hate their power being usurped. If it is for lesser things, if it is not when the child feels threat of harm, but is simply being harassed, the father may make it a point the next time he has the children to make things worse.
I see.
To come up with other ways to make that child feel so uncomfortable as a, quote, punishment for them trying to usurp his power.
Okay, so you're saying 911, which should be the last resort, because that could upset dad or the perpetrator.
Exacerbate, yes.
The relationship or the abuse.
Exactly. It is a resort that is appropriate when harm is being threatened, because each of us has a duty to warn. Of course, I, as a psychiatrist, believe that one of my clients wishes to harm someone and hasn't told that someone, but has told me, I'm required to fill out a form and let the authorities know. And children have the same right if they have been informed that their parent wants to harm them, then they can report that.
What's the biggest thing that you think people think that they know about this subject that isn't true?
We've touched a little bit upon it already. The business of what is abuse. Many people in society assume that abuse is only when someone actually punches you in the face or throws your body somewhere, etc., etc. However, there is so much more involved, and it's a matter of actually becoming enlightened to find out that when a person is speaking in a way to manipulate you and uses veiled threat or manipulation, or is constantly or even occasionally in the beginning discrediting whatever your ideas are and is projecting onto you that it's your fault for whatever negative situation is occurring, all of these things are more subtle signs, but they are actually abuse.
So how can this situation be turned around?
All right. If a person is feeling oddly about a relationship, if there is this business of power play and constant control with occasional discrediting, disrespect, or contempt from a partner, one should look into and become educated about exactly what abuse is. In fact, everyone should read about abuse. And I have an excellent resource for a quick education. There are multiple places online where you can get the beginner condensed version of what abuse is. There is a book out, however, for those who are wondering if their relationship is actually an abusive one. It is by a man named Lundy Bancroft, and the book is called Why Does He Do That? And the longer version of the title is Why Does He Do That? Inside the Minds of Angry and Controlling Men. And this is excellent in talking about the features of abuse. When people ask, will he ever be violent in a relationship? If he has ever raised a fist as if he were going to hit you, if he's ever thrown an object that hit you or nearly did, if he's ever held you down or grabbed you to restrain you, if he has ever shoved, poked, or grabbed you, if he has ever threatened to hurt you, if the answer to any of these is yes, then we can stop wondering about whether he'll ever be violent. He already has been.
So then he can be again, is what you're saying.
Yes. What I'm saying is that people may not even recognize the violence as it's happening to them. And so with an education, they can learn these things, become more aware. And insight is the first step to taking action.
And then that's when you can start helping your children, because you're now becoming,
yes,
more aware and educated.
Yes, then you can share information with them so that they become enlightened and they understand what is going on.
For those people who say are already in a relationship, how can they maintain a healthy family dynamic?
All right. There are red flags that one can keep an eye out for in a relationship to see if perhaps it is turning into an abusive one. And those tips can be found in the Lundy Bancroft book. Basically, we will see someone who will become abusive, acting charming and magnetic in personality to begin with, will appear as a wonderful person to everyone else. And yet, once usually a woman has committed to him, that is when things will begin to change. So once a woman has committed to a relationship, to a dating relationship even, things can become evident that might make her wonder and think possibly this could be abuse. Once the mother has learned these things, she can impart this knowledge to her children, particularly to her daughters, so that when they are dating or meeting boys in high school, they can already have their radars up and begin a template for maneuvering through his actions, sorting through, figuring out what might be abusive, and then deciding whether or not she wishes to continue. For instance, a woman can learn that if a man speaks disrespectfully about his former partners, if he's disrespectful toward the mother herself, if he does favors for the mother that she doesn't want or puts on a show of generosity that makes her uncomfortable, these are all signs. If he is controlling, if he is possessive, if nothing is ever his fault, if he is self-centered, if he abuses drugs or alcohol, if he pressures her for sex, if he gets serious too quickly about the relationship, if he intimidates her when he's angry, if he has double standards, has negative attitudes towards women, and if he treats her differently around other people, if he appears to be attracted to vulnerability. No one of these is a warning sign of an abusive man. However, many exhibit a number of these behaviors to a limited degree. So the woman is to make it clear to him as soon as possible which behaviors or attitudes are unacceptable, and that you cannot be in a relationship with him if they continue. And if this happens, stop seeing him for a substantial period of time. Don't keep seeing him with the warning that this time you really mean it, that you're going to leave, because he probably will interpret that to mean you don't really mean it. And if it happens a third time, or if he switches to other behaviors that are warning flags, chances are great that he does have an abuse problem. And if you give him too many chances, you're likely to regret it later. Finally, be aware that as an abuser begins his slide into abuse, he believes that you are the one who is changing. His perceptions work this way because he needs to justify to himself his actions. So he can't imagine then on a conscious level that the problem might be with him. All he notices is that you don't seem to be living up to his image of the perfect, all-giving, deferential woman. When a mother is empowered with this knowledge and she can impart this to her children, this can help nip things in the bud for the daughter who's dating.
Wow. Okay. I mean, this goes to that quote where they say, you know, before you can change the world, change what's inside of you. So
exactly.
Getting more knowledge, getting more educated is going to help your daughter and your son.
Exactly.
Wow. Exactly. Okay.
And we do want to help our sons too.
Yes.
We've mentioned daughters, and yet one of the keys in this society where men are favored, one of the keys is to get more male role models who treat women correctly.
Absolutely. So, and we need to train these male to treat women properly. Yeah.
Exactly.
So what is, we're running out of time, and I want to make sure that people know what your current project, what's your future project, where they can go find you. So let's talk about that. What are your, I know you have some projects coming up.
Yes, I do have a national convention that I participate in annually. It's called the Conscious Life Expo from February 10th through 12th at the LAX Hilton. This is a wonderful place for people who are more conscious, health conscious in different ways, about the type of food they put into their bodies, about the energy that they hold, and about holding space for others in relationships and honoring each other. And in this place, I am available to do energy healing sessions. So I am found at in this hotel, there are multiple levels for the vendors. I am in the below lobby level at table T3. I would love to meet any of you. The business name there is Eve Spirit Speaks. Spirit simply being a word or a symbol for the term energy.
Obviously, this expo is coming around in a couple of days. So what happens afterwards? How can people find other events or how to get a hold of you?
I am, thank you, going to be holding a seminar, so to speak, or a free workshop talking about abuse, divorce, and what comes next. And I would love for any listeners who feel that they may identify with some of the features that I discussed today, if they are in the Orange County area or even in the outlying counties, to come and join me. The exact location is to be arranged, and the way that you can keep tabs on that is simply to email me at dr.eve@empowermentfirm.com, and the Dr. Eve is Eve with a Y. Instead of E-V-E, it's Y-V-E.
This is all in the show notes, so if you scroll down past Dr. Eve's picture, you'll see all the contact information.
Yes, we will put you on a newsletter, and the newsletter will have further announcements for this event, this free event, and for other events that I have.
And then you have a Facebook page too.
Yes, I do. I have a Facebook page called Eve Spirit Speaks, where I like to post motivational articles. And particularly over Thanksgiving and Christmas, I did special articles that were extended and that thousands of people read that were specifically covering abuse. That one is Eve Spirit Speaks.
And then Dr. Eve's email address is Dr., which is DRYVE@empowermentfirm.com. Thank you so much, Dr. Eve. This has been so informative, and I hope that it touches some of the moms and the parents out there to really take action and do something very powerful.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to have been a guest of yours.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Go to parentpumpradio.com and click on the pink box on the top of our homepage to listen to our new and archived shows, which are featured on missionswithanSradio.org. To be instantly notified of new episodes, subscribe to our RSS feed. The RSS feed button is located at the top of the page where all our shows are featured on missionsradio.org. And after listening to the show, go to parentpumpradio.com or our Facebook page to leave your comments, questions, and topic suggestions. And while you're at our website, sign up to receive a free gift. Until next time, have a wonderful week.